You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 716, and we've got a jam-packed episode tonight and breaking news. If you're listening to this from between midnight on February 4 through 2 p.m. on February 4, breaking news. If you listen to this afterwards, it'll just be regular news. But we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot to talk about here with Sammy B. Sammy B, you have scheduled a very cool interview for next week that's going to be on the podcast. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a very hardcore human, and I hope you enjoy his banter.
Well, who is it?
Well, it is Chris Wren of B9, Bridge Nine Records,
Oh,
that
very well.
guy.
Should I put on like a basketball jersey and talk about like holding it down and that kind of thing and staying true to my roots, do you think?
Like H2O, don't forget your roots. I don't think we need basketball jerseys, but we definitely need to throw band names and humans out there, like give everybody we know a shout out, shout out to my sister and shout out to my aunties, things like that.
What I will say is Bridge Nine's brand of hardcore to me is definitely more, what's what I'm looking for? Smarter than like generic like hardcore, and even a lot of hardcore that's hardcore today. You know, there definitely seem to be an intelligence and a thoughtfulness behind most Bridge Nine bands, as opposed to say your average pull of a modern hardcore band.
Well, I think in order to get into the Bridge Nine circle, you kind of have to know be a good human. I think he definitely follows a very good ethos type of situation. I'm not saying every hardcore person is a bad human. I'm just saying very like-minded humans.
Well, Bridge Nine put out one of the three greatest modern hardcore records, Ronette Park by Ceremony. So we will definitely be talking about that. We're also here with M Moore. M Moore, you've got a new episode of M Moore tells you what to listen
Hello.
to right now. How does that feel?
It feels good. It feels good to have the episodes back going, being posted. I have the graphics that I'm gonna post in a minute, but yeah, it's nice to get back in the saddle, as it were. And how long do you think it'll take for Spotify to remove it? I'm gonna
Well,
say
you've been
2 weeks.
M's been getting swatted by Spotify because she has, she just kind of mixes episodes and put them up. So M, do you Sam, you know what's funny is M seemed to be truly bothered that she got swatted by Spotify. M,
I
why
think
were you
it's
so?
funny.
Oh,
I'm not bothered
I
by it. I just think it's funny. personally, well, I personally say F that. Who cares? We're gonna keep on doing what we do, however we want to do it, and let M do her thing, right? Because honestly, I was like, isn't all these corporations like not the best anyways?
Yeah, Spotify sucks ass big time. So screw you, Spotify. We hate you. But here's something that we don't hate. Here's something that we love. Summer Soiree
Yeah.
Nine announced. Unless it's midnight, February 4 to 1:59 p.m., in which case it's not announced. But you're getting breaking news, people here. Summer Soiree Nine scheduled August 1 in Philadelphia at Philomoka. And who's playing, you say? Well, we've got a. Well, I say to myself every time, I say, how? How can I top myself? How? I don't know if I top myself, but I think I achieved the level of pure awesomeness that is required for a summer soiree, because summer soirees are never just shows, they are events. And this year's event is pretty slamming. It's called Black Market Clash in celebration of the 50th anniversary of The Clash. And this Summer Soiree is kind of a sequel to Summer Soiree 7, which was the Ramones 50th anniversary. And we had Danjo Mar, the Joe Jack Talcum band, do all Ramones, the Mike Yard band, do all Ramones, the Ramones, and Pink Soap. Well, this year, Black Market Clash, 50th anniversary of The Clash. Co-headliners, Ghetto Defendant. He said, John, who's Ghetto Defendant? Well, it's R and J of the Slackers with Vinny of Doom Stompers. And who on vocals? Kepi Ghouli in his first Philadelphia show in, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, a long time. And also, I mean, he very rarely plays the East Coast anymore. He hasn't really done an East Coast tour since like 2000, 2016, I guess it was, or so. So this is them doing all Clash. I've seen the set list, and woo-hoo-hoo, it is sweet. Also, Dambert of Chumbawamba doing Clash acoustic and Dambert solo. This is going to be cool. Of course, as the listeners surely know, M, who wrote the very first Clash diss track ever?
The very first Clash diss track.
Yes.
It wasn't Chumbawamba, was it?
It was Chumbawamba on Bullshit Detector
Hey.
2, I think maybe Bullshit Detector 1. They wrote the very first Clash diss track. It's called Garage Land, of course, mimicking the Clash song Garage Land. And they did that even though they love the Clash and saw the Clash many times. And so we've got Dan Bird in some cute agitprop yet again, agitprop actions. Covering the Clash. He actually does like the Clash though, of course. And that's gonna be cool. Also, the Drew Gets are now reunited. They're a five piece now, and they will be doing hits from the first Clash LP and the Draculas, who I think, Sam, you know them, don't you? Or maybe you don't.
Yes, I do. I know the drummer.
The Draculas, they will be doing songs of hate and war and love. And I've seen basically their set list, and it is going to be a insanely good night. Plus, there's other special surprises that are going to blow people's mind that I'm not even going to mention. You just got to show and see what the special surprise is. That's August 1 at Philomoka in Philadelphia. Tickets are on sale now, only $20. All the other summer soirees sold out, so knock on wood, this one will sell out too. So get your tickets sooner rather than later. So that's Black Market Clash with Gutter Defended, R&J the Slackers, plus Vinny of Doom Stompers, plus the icon himself, Kepi Ghouli, who was always fighting the good fight, doing all Clash, and I've seen the set list, it's amazing. Danbert of Chumbawamba doing solo cuts and Clash acoustic. The Drugettes doing hits of Clash, the first record, and the Draculas doing Clash's songs of hate and war and love. So I'm psyched. This is going to be rad, people. This is going to be rad. So that's going to be fun. So come on down. I always say, how can I top myself? How can I top myself? Well, this one's going to be pretty cool. And are you going to come down from Canada to see the show?
I would like to. I think it would be fun. I have to see about the border, but
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
yeah. Hopefully.
Sam, are you going to come down from New York to see the show?
I don't think I'm gonna be able to because I already have things to do that weekend. John,
Sam, you're
stop
supposed
booking
to say
things the same days I have stuff to do.
you're supposed to say yes, Sam, and just not show anyways. But that's Sam says he's gonna be there,
Well,
people. So
you
come
know
on down and
what?
say hi to Sam.
I'm not gonna lie to the people. What if someone actually wants to see me or, you know, have a hit on me? We don't want
Well,
that.
someone
No.
if someone doesn't want to see Sam, they can come to the record freakout, not the February 28 record freakout, which is at Philomoka, but rather the May record freakout, which I think is May 17, at
Yeah.
Neshaminy Creek Brewing. And you can buy tickets for Summer Story 9 there as well. And this is going to be rad. We're going to have goodie bags. We got a whole bunch of special stuff, plus Game Changer. I don't know why I never saw this before. So copies at King, a copy at Staples are very expensive, 31 cents for a single sided black and white copy, which 7 years ago, it was about 8 cents. Then in COVID, it jumped up to 21 cents. Then they just said, okay, we'll just make it 32 cents because we feel 34 cents because we
What?
feel like it. It's crazy expensive. However, and that's for an 8.5 by 11. However, 17 by 11 paper, Sam, only 42 cents. So I can make posters for 42 cents each.
You should
Game changer.
definitely do that. Yeah, that is such a game changer. However, why are you going to Kinko's or whatever when you could just use the
That's
hovercraft
true. I should use the printer.
office?
You know,
Yeah.
when I worked in Harrisburg, and I'm not gonna draw this out too much, but when I worked in Harrisburg, the Summer Soiree 1 and Summer Soiree 2 and Summer Soiree 3 actually, goodie bags came with entire board games that I made. And the board games, I don't know if anybody know will recall
Yep.
this. There was a board game called Warhammer Quest, which is similar to Hero Quest, which is similar to Talisman. And it came with an entire board game, which was literally like 100 sheets each. Each goodie bag came with 100 sheets like of game. And no one cared about them. They just threw them away. They didn't even care about them. It
Oh
was
my
really
God,
annoying.
John. No.
But like it was an entire game with three rule books characters, scenery, everything you got for free in the goodie bag. And the only reason I was able to do that is because at the lofts I worked at, I would stay there late at night and print up like insane amount. Like I would blow through like literally like tens or like
Reams.
thousands of reams of thousands of pay, pieces of paper. Wait, actually, tens of thousands of people paper. I probably blew through about like having 30 reams of paper. It was pretty crazy. So I can't do that now. So anyways, so if you got one of those board games, lucky you. And if you didn't, well, you ain't getting one now. There's like none left. Okay. Let's talk about some news here. Effed Up's going on tour. They're doing a Zodiac tour. And right now, only I believe it's only Canada dates have been announced. Oh, and UK
Canada and the
dates.
UK.
So they're doing the Zodiac tour. I actually saw the Zodiac tour about 6 or 7, I know, probably about 8 years ago now. It was them and I want to say Doomtree, but it wasn't. No, Doomtree's like a crappy rap group. It was Effed Up in Doom something. I'll see if I can look up. Anyways, it was them that they did basically did like 3 or 4 Zodiac. They did a year of the dragon, they did a year of the pig, year of the dog, and maybe one of their Zodiac. And they kind of weave them all together. And it was an amazing, amazing, amazing tour. And actually, I remember I saw it the day before I started my new job out in Harrisburg. And I was actually pretty, like, maybe when the day before, maybe like 3 days before. I really enjoyed the show, but I was kind of, I guess, miserable and kind of anxious about starting my new job. So I really enjoyed it, but I had to focus on enjoying it without letting other things, bother my mind. Anyway, so the effed up Zodiac tour I saw back then was absolutely amazing. It got their worst reviews to date. I remember in the effed up Facebook group,
Oh.
at the time was very active. Everyone gave it terrible reviews, and I really didn't know why. Like it's them doing all their most far out proggiest stuff, which and metalist stuff, which I totally I to this day I don't know why it got such bad reviews from effed up fans. I think because they kind of did that tour right after David Comes to Life, I think. And so at that time, all the fans were kind of like the college rock style fans, which to me is my least favorite aspect of Effed Up. So for them to do the most farthest out and challenging stuff all in a row was awesome. And I absolutely loved it. So I would definitely recommend seeing this tour. Year of the, not Hair just came out. What's the one that just came out? And was it Year of the Hair? Not Year of the Hair.
You're the goat.
Goat, Year of the Goat just came out. And so this looks pretty cool. M. Are you going to check this out? Is it coming near you?
They have a show in Toronto, and it's at like this really cool place. It's kind of like a community center, sort of. Like it looks like a Lithuanian house, but it's different. So it looks like a really cool venue to be able to see the band in. And I would love to see this. I'd love to see them live. I think it would be so much fun. And like to see some of the Zodiac stuff like come to life would be so sick because it's like, how are they going to do it and everything? So I am hoping that I will be able to go because that would just be amazing. I've never seen them live. I'm always like, there's always something going on that day, or like something comes up or whatever, and I just like I can't go, and it's always like, ah, damn, you know, one day.
I've seen him live like 10 times, and what do you think of that?
Lucky.
Sam, do you like effed up? I'm not sure. I forget.
Not an effed up fan. However, I think I have seen them in Brooklyn, which, you know, checks out, I guess, because there was a specific spate of time in all of our lives that every damn band ended up in Brooklyn playing for God knows what reasons. I'm not a fan of them, but I do love the fact that they have an entire series off of the Zodiac because I do love the Zodiac. Well, you know, I do care about Zodiac animals at least.
Well, this will be cool. Effed Up is so interesting right now because I'm actually just scrolling right through the Effed Up Setlist FM, and they played Philadelphia a bunch of times when I was around, and I missed it, and I wonder why. Anyways, with Effed Up is like it's always curious, like. What's going on in the world of effed up? It doesn't seem like it's any of their main jobs, right? Or is it?
So I normally don't think that any of these bands of this size this is their main job. Like,
Yeah.
even the three of us, we have jobs on top of, punk news, to sustain living, because that's what we do. Like, punk isn't necessarily, with most punk bands, that is an endeavor that sustains living. Just look at how much Spotify pays any particular band. Pennies. So yeah.
I like it would be so nice if it was, and you could just like sustain yourself off of it and like live in the dream.
Well, I think that's tour style now, right?
Well, true.
But like what I'm saying is what I'm saying is like what is the status of effed up? You know what I mean? Like how are they functioning, I wonder.
When
Know,
like
like
it seems like they put things out when they feel like it. They don't play that often, that I know
they
of.
don't. No.
So it's, I'm not sure the living situations and or the current status of anyone's families out here. So it's also plausible that a couple of the members of Effed Up has kids,
I think they all have kids pretty much. Not
Yeah,
all of them, but most of them.
because sometimes, having kids, like, you have to take a pause from your passion projects and, raise some good kids. And once the kids are grown enough, you then say, okay, I'm gonna go on the road for, spates of times, short spates of times, not long ones. Everyone has to be in agreement of this and, understand it, and they do the things that they want to do. I could only speak from experience with my husband's band. Like, they pretty much been playing for over 10 years together, but hasn't done anything until recent, like, record an album and stuff like that, because there's also kids involved in this equation.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder like what the like who's the boss? Is it Halachuk? I think I mean effed up is famously a power struggle, but I think at this point Halachuk kind of is the de facto, well, he's not the boss, but he's the director, and then if Damien wants to do it, he does it, I think, and so like I just wonder how when they go on tour, like does Halachuk write everyone up and say we're gonna go on tour, or like what's the artistic process? And how do they make decisions as a band? That's what I'd like to know. Maybe they don't even know, honestly.
It seems
So.
like something that would just kind of happen sort of like organically. That's what he was saying when he was on the podcast when we interviewed him.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of, but I wonder how much of a power struggle there is there. I think it, honestly, from his interview, it's, at this point, I think there's actually a big one right now. And of course, I mean that's the cliche of effed up is how are they getting along? And at this point, I think they're like not getting along, and not that they're not getting along, they're just not in communication except for in regards to effed up, So, anyways, we're probably never going to know at this point. And I guess it's kind of an old topic, but I would like to know. So, listen, let's talk politics. One of the commenters at Punk News kind of complained that we're talking about politics, and I'm like, well, guess what, buddy? Punk politics is not the only aspect of punk. But it is one of the main aspects of punk. And right now, things suck ass, and things can always get worse, but things can get better. And right now, things suck ass in America, politically wise. I mean, they suck pretty bad right now. So, punk news needs to be more political, frankly. We need to cover political stuff more, and we're going to because otherwise, we're just an entertainment website like some other punk websites. And so, this is where we distinguish ourselves and kind of try to do at least some good. So, we're going to talk about politics a lot more, punk news coming up. We're going to cover it more. As to how it relates to music and the arts, and maybe even more so if it's relevant. And that's just how it's going to be. So deal with it, baby. And if you're a MAGA Trump head, screw you. Anyways, Trump is closing the Kennedy Center for 2 years. As listeners probably know, last year Trump fired all the board of directors of the Kennedy Center, which is famously kind of the president, the federal government backed performing arts center. Trump fired the entire head of directors, appointed a whole new people, and all the new people named Trump as chairman of the board because Trump is so well known for being a patron of the arts and appreciating art and culture. And then they immediately renamed it the Donald A. Trump John F. Kennedy Center, as opposed to the Kennedy Center, which is weird and creepy. And between the time that Trump fired the board and renamed the thing, a whole bunch of artists pulled out, including Ben Folds, Peter Wolf, who I like more and more all the time. Same, who's Peter Wolf?
I don't remember right now.
Singer for the Jay Giles Band, Sam. Singer for the Jay Giles Band. Philip Glass pulled out, and a whole bunch of other people pulled out too. Also, they canceled some events, including the Gay Men's Chorus of Washington, which definitely seemed to be homophobic to me. I like if it was like the men's chorus, I don't think they would have fired it. And then the U.S. Marine Band, which is bizarre too. Just goes to show how Trump is even hated by the military. And so, anyways, attendance has plummeted at the Kennedy Center. I'm not even going to call what it's named right now. Rightfully so, because they suck so bad. So Trump doing y yet another one of his cockamamie lie type things is he's closing it, quote, for 2 years for renovations, even though there have been no reports that the place has needed to be renovated at all. And so basically he's just trying to save face or whatever. And so they're closing the Kennedy Center for 2 years. They're going to waste a whole bunch of money, which I'm sure Trump's going to get paid off from somehow. And it's supposed to reopen in 2 years after July 4. And so there's a whole bunch of political stuff we're going to talk about tonight. But this is just depressing and weird. And you know, what's frustrating to me, what's one of the things that's frustrating to me is Trump is just so corrupt. I mean, any one thing that Trump would do would knock out any other president. But because he's got such a cult behind him, and because he does so many wacky things, and because he's so good at doing some bullshit stuff and then immediately doing something else that's bullshit, people forget. I mean, people are already forgetting about the Epstein files and stuff like that. Is the scary thing is the first time Trump was around, he was incompetent and at a total disaster. This time, either him or the people behind him are much more agile and much fit quicker, and they're making much more progress than they were the first time around because they're more tuned as to how to, you know, take corrupt and illegal and push through corrupt and illegal actions. And so I'm bumming out big time. And this is just another in a long, long strand of Trump's whack stuff. And he keeps losing, but he keeps winning. And so, Sam, at the end of the day, is Trump going to win, or is this all going to collapse at the end of the day? Our political analyst, Sam Barrett. We go now to Sam Barrett, our political analyst.
Here's the thing. This is all for perception, right? I
True.
was like, he is making the ballroom or whatever in the White House larger, more grand. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot more marble and gold in it, right? I think I read something that the Kennedy Center actually did a renovations in like 2018 or something. So if they didn't like if it's structurally sound and was renovated in 2019, if that is true, then what the hell are we doing? My entire thought about this is he's definitely throwing in his pizzazz into the Kennedy Center, like, you know, maybe more gold, maybe more marble, you know, a very expensive things at the American tax payers' dime, because John, really, who do you think is paying for this? We are.
Yeah.
Not M, sorry. You're in better pastures up there, I think. but honestly, like, you know, I could see this happening poorly because you know, a lot of people, like I think they renovated Lincoln Center in New York City and or something like that, and it took them years of planning to do so. This isn't years of planning. There was no damn way that years of planning went into this when you fired everyone, right? And then hired your own people into spaces and made himself the board member, the sole board member. for things, and unilaterally just say, I'm gonna throw my name on all of these new buildings, right? He's also been throwing his name on buildings for to try to rebrand, but he can't because a lot of these buildings are historic buildings, so you can't necessarily erase things. Unfortunately, this kind of makes me think of North Korea a
Yeah,
little
right.
bit. Like, how there's spaces in North Korea that is okay for foreigners to Google at and see. Meanwhile, there's spaces in North Korea that we're not allowed to see because that's the reality of what things are. So it seems like Washington, D.C. is heading in let's make it look like a mausoleum so that people could ooh and ah at how grand everything is. I hopefully I'm ho please prove me wrong, but hopefully all of the toilets in the Kennedy Center is not going to be gold, because we already know that a golden toilet is not necessarily the best thing. Yeah, I don't know, John. I don't think me the people like me and you is winning this. We're definitely not. If Trump wins, cool, good for him. But really, the rest of us is suffering.
Well, there's Sam's political take. Em, what do you think of
Yes.
the Kennedy Center being shut down for 2 years for, quote, renovations?
I think it's complete bullshit, and I think it's because everyone canceled.
Yeah, well, you're right. I agree 100%. There you go.
Yeah.
And more, we're dead on the political analysis, which I agree with.
Hey.
Listen, man, some people are fighting back. Now's the time to stand up to the plate and make some action. So watch, I'll just hit some in a row here. Bruce Springsteen's got a new single. It's called The Streets of Minneapolis, and it is in protest of ICE. That's the new Bruce song. NOFX is stepping into the arena. They've got a song called Minnesota Nazis. And I'm going to read Fat Mike's statement about it real quick. Here's Fat Mike's statement. I wrote a song called Huntington Beach Nazis in 2022 when I spent 6 sober weeks there. There's actually an intersection of Rhine and Hale Streets. Kind of weird. Anyway, after all these recent heartbreaks in Minnesota, I decided to change some lyrics in the song and release it digitally. I even changed the title of the song to Minnesota Nazis. I reckon it's appropriate. This song isn't going to stop the absolute madness, but you do what you can to make this world a better place. Let's look out for each other the best we can. Love is greater than hate. Even though it doesn't seem like it right now. Also, Tom Morello, we talked about him last week, he
We did.
quickly
Billy
organized
Bragg, though, has a new one.
and Billy Bragg's got a new one, but Tom Morello organized an anti-ICE concert last week, and it was him rise against Al DiMeola, Ike Riley, and the surprise guest was the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen. And that was a big success. It sold out, of course, and a lot of people enjoyed it and were moved by it. Billy Bragg's got a new tune too. And some actually, one of the commenters at Punk News said, "Heard this yesterday." This is in regards to Bruce. "Heard this yesterday. Sounds like the boss has lost his fastball in old age." And I kind of did an uppercut. I'm landed pretty good. I said, "At least he's stepping up to the plate when it counts." Wham! And so. And do you think these kinds of things are useful? Are they effective? And should punks and should musicians and artists as a whole be doing more?
Think this kind of stuff definitely like makes a difference because it's a snapshot in time and it's like showing like, hey, we're not gonna be like we're gonna make the music that we want to make, and but we're also going to make sure that we're commenting on kind of the world as a whole. So, like protest music kind of comes and goes, and you can argue that a lot of punk is protest music, and I'd agree with that. But, it's good to see people talking about things that are happening as they're actively happening, and not something that happened like a while ago, and you're just kind of like revisiting it. It's kind of like the Vietnam War protest songs where they're like immediate. They're right there. Everything's going on. They're such a snapshot in time. Some of them you can listen to and they'll hold up well. Some of them you'll listen to and you're like, I can see how that was important at the time and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's good to have artists do this and write songs and put it out. And it also makes people feel like they're not alone in it too, right? Like it's kind of that hope, like, oh, these other people are paying attention and they're speaking up about it. And, you know, maybe because they are, so can I, and different things like that. Another thing is like, if you're younger and you're not very familiar with like politics or whatever, protest music or music that talks about, again, kind of current events or events that were current at the time really helps you kind of get into that and see what's going on and whatever. You know, and kind of give everything more of a context. So I think it's definitely important. And then with bands or artists that aren't making music about it, a lot of them are putting on shows that benefit like people who have been impacted by ICE, or benefit like relief organizations and stuff like that. So even though they might not be singing about it, they're doing something with shows, they're doing something, you know, kind of like with social media. So it's interesting to see who does stuff and who doesn't. But yeah, that's my take. I just dropped my pen. Sam, what do you think?
So, yes, their punk music has historically always been about reactions, feelings to things like that, right? I actually love, like, you know, political punks. Like, I love, one of my favorite bands is Strike Anywhere, and you know, they always have some kind of, like, you know, connotation meanings towards, you know, having bad things in the government and stuff like that. So I do gravitate towards this being, you know, my gut feeling for this is good. This is good that they are s doing anything that they can, in whatever ways that they can, to bring light to a certain situation. You know, NoFX specifically has always had, Fat Mike has always had things to say. He will always put his two cents in things. So this does not shock me that he would pretty much really jig some lyrics and re-record an old song that he had with new lyrics, to you know, make it more relevant now. You know, he, like, what was it, one of the covers of the NoFX album had Bush on it, and they redid it with Trump on it now. So duh, typical NoFX thing, right? Bruce Springsteen is also another one. He's on a diff he's not necessarily punk per se, right? But he's definitely a person, a Jersey person that, like, you know, has always had something to say about what is happening in the government. I am just thankful that there is people are saying things, singing about things, making things to air their grievances in a time where we feel oppressed and we feel like we're not able to say the things that we want to say because we might get kidnapped or locked up for saying bad things. So yeah, this is definitely important to me, at least. This is definitely important snapshot of the world. I don't necessarily talk about politics a lot because I do like to get back into the country whenever I travel, and I will be traveling real soon, actually. But at this point, like, you know, you cannot deny that there is some nefarious doings in this country right now.
Well, Sam brings up a great point in that Don Lemon got arrested like 2 or 3 days ago, and he wasn't even doing anything. He just got arrested because he's a CNN journalist or ex-CNN journalist, which is super scary. and is fascism and is North Korea.
Also person of color.
Also person of damn straight, darn tootin'. So what Bruce is doing, what Tom is doing, what Mike is doing, I think it's great. And I think now, I would almost say now, punk rockers, but even artists as a whole, have some sort of a duty to speak up in some regards. I mean, that I think they kind of are charged with that duty. And frankly, I think punks are not being as loud as they should be. There's lots of punk websites, right? Well, there's not a lot. There's a few other punk news websites or websites of news that deal about punk rock, and they're being dead quiet. They're like, who remembers Kurt Cobain? Descendants, they got a new record coming out. That's cool, but they are not really covering what they should be covering just because they want to be inoffensive and kind of entertainment. And punk is not just entertainment. So I think most punk bands should be doing more than what they're doing right now. I think most pop artists should be doing more than what they're doing now, which makes it all that much more commendable. Those that are saying things like Taylor Swift, like Bad Bunny, who I'm not even a fan of the music, but Bad Bunny is standing up when Bad Bunny, an American, mind you, is standing up when it counts. At the Grammys, he gave a speech in Spanish and he kind of talked about how bad ICE is and that kind of a thing, and how bad the current governmental policies are, and I approve of that. And this is going to tie into a conversation Em and I had last week. Super Bowl, actually, it's Super Bowl in like 5 days. Sam, do you know?
It's
It's
this
this Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, Super Bowl this Sunday. Bad Bunny slated to appear. Will Bad Bunny make a political statement during the halftime show? And of course, Green Day's opening. Will Green Day make a political statement during their opening act? As I said, and I believe as Em agreed, now is the time for Green Day to prove themselves as either true punks or phony wannabes. And I think they're going to prove themselves to be true punks by making a political statement. And I think now it's now or never. It is the do or die moment. I think now it is incumbent upon Green Day to make a statement in some regards with regards to the current political situation. And I think due to Bad Bunny's statement at the Grammys, M, do you think Bad Bunny? What's your opinion now? Will Bad Bunny make political statements at the Super Bowl? And actually, I'm interested to hear Sam weigh in, of course. Sam, the question is this: is Green Day and Bad Bunny are slated to perform at the Super Bowl? Bad Bunny, I'm gonna say Green Bunny. Bad Bunny is proving himself to be willing to make political statements and have a political voice, which I approve of. Green Day famously has for pretty much their entire career. However, the Super Bowl is famously right wing to a degree, but also they tend to shy away from any sort of political statement because the Super Bowl and the NFL is about one thing. Sam, what is the NFL? What's the one thing the NFL is about?
Making money and football.
Exactly. Exactly. So they don't want any kind of political statement. So the question is, Sam, will Bad Bunny make a political statement? Will Green Day at the Super Bowl, where traditionally they want no political statement? Sam, what do you think is going to happen?
I personally think they're both going to try. I think it's not going to be anything grand that's going to happen because all of these performances are, I don't want to say rigged, but kind of like really curated, by the NFL and stuff like that. The fact that the NFL has stood by having Bad Bunny still on it with the uproar that they have had for someone that doesn't speak like sing in English a lot. And he's also Bad Bunny's also made a political statement because he literally did a residency in Puerto Rico and only really wanted Puerto Ricans to get tickets for those shows, which I was like, yeah, you give back to your community and that's your community, right? I think what they can do is control their clothing. The messages on their guitar, they could probably control. Things like that, I think they could potentially slip in something, like, as they're like exiting their segment, type of situation. People are gonna get upset. I personally could care less because, for the Super Bowl, I'm really there for the puppies. because Puppy Bowl is more important than Super Bowl for me. Also, this Super Bowl is against the Patriots and anyone but the Patriots, please. Yeah, I know. Half of Boston probably hates me, but whatever. I'm from New York. Get over it. But yeah, no, I think that's what they might do if they actually do something.
When Sam said control her clothes, I thought she was making a Janet Jackson reference, who famously could not control her clothes at the Super Bowl. Also performing with a Sam B favorite, Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
So Sam says she could not care less, but I care a great deal because I think now is the time for artists to make statements, and I want them to make a statement. So I care a great deal. M, your prediction on Bad
Yes.
Bunny's political statement and Green Day's political statement, has it changed since last week now that Bad Bunny is making political statements at the Grammys?
Well, I thought both of them were gonna make political statements at the Super Bowl. I think it's gonna be more so now. Like, I think, if they can do something to like slip past where it's like, oh, yep, we're doing this in rehearsal, but actually live, we're gonna do this, or something like that. Like, that'd be kind of cool. But I think no matter what, they're gonna both make really big political statements. Well, with Bad Bunny, anyways, like he's gonna perform in Spanish, like all in Spanish. I don't think he's gonna have any English in his set. So, like, that's really awesome
Well, you
in
mean him
itself.
saying learn some Spanish?
Yep. Yeah, you want to know what I just said?
Yeah,
Learn the
learn,
language.
go to the Duolingo owl and ask him. The Superb Bowl. Or no, Superb Owl. There you go. That's where we're going.
Yay.
My question was, before this goes down, obviously the Super Bowl has to know that Green Day are political and that Bad Bunny's political. And so I would expect him to have a contract that says, I would expect the Super Bowl to fashion a contract that says you can't say anything political. But I wonder now, though, of course, famously, the performers at the Super Bowl actually paid to be there, which is insane. That's how cheap the Super Bowl is. You have to pay to perform at the Super Bowl, which is insane. So I wonder if, like, I wonder if there was some sort of negotiation between Bad Bunny's people and the Super Bowl. Like, okay, you can say this, but you can't say that. And they're like, well, we want to say this. Well, how about you don't say that, but you make it 70% as intense? So I wonder if there was a negotiation as to what political statement they can make, you know? So in 5 days, we're going to see. I'm literally going to watch the Super. I mean, I'm not into football, right? But I'm literally going to watch the Super Bowl to see what political statements are made, both by Green Day, who, you know, like I said, I always say I'm not a fan, but I'm not a hater, but I'm backing Green Day. I want them to win on this one, and I'll be excited to see what Bad Bunny says too. But I'm going to bend this back to the Grammys.
Yeah.
Turnstile won 2 Grammys. Best metal performance, which was kind of an odd category to put him in,
Yep.
especially now. They won best metal performance for the song Birds and best rock album for Never Enough. I think Turnstile is meh, you know, but whatever, people love them. And I guess it's cool that sort of an indie alt-ish sort of punk band is getting a Grammy. There's any other bands that I think should have gotten it, but of course, I'm a realist and I realize, you know, Joe Jack, Talcum, and Dead Milk, but I'm not going to get a Grammy, probably, even though they should. But here's my question, Sam and M. Bad Bunny was very political in his Grammy acceptance speech. Turnstile, a quote, punk band, just got up there and said, thanks, everybody. This is exciting. Wow. We love Baltimore. Thanks. See you later. Sam, I'm going to throw this to M first because
Okay.
I like throwing M hard questions.
Thanks.
Should. What so here's the thing is the way is Turnstile made no political statements. I thought they were a punk band. Now's the time to be punk. Should they have made a statement, or is it unfair for them to is it unfair to hold them to make a statement as a overview of the integrity of the band? Because you win a Grammy once or twice in your life, unless you're Kendrick Lamar, unless you then you win 27. But is it unfair to require Turnstile to make something when this is their one moment that they might get their this might be their greatest moment in their musical life, maybe, depending on who they are. You know, some people don't care about Grammys, but it's an important moment. So is it unfair to require them, even as a punk band, to make a political statement because that will draw ire, that will draw commentary from all sides of the map and so forth? Or as a punk band, they say, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. As a punk, do you have a responsibility to make a political statement when you can at such a widespread and wide scene event?
So, They posted on Instagram and they shared their acceptance speech, and in the caption for the acceptance speech they got political. Do you want me to read the caption?
Yes, please
And
do.
then I will answer your question. So it starts out, "On Sunday, our band won two Grammys for Best Rock Album and Best Metal Performance. We never thought we'd be in these rooms, but we are very grateful to be here. The band has never been about the individual, but rather about a collective searching for a common thread in a world where those threads are being hidden from us. The world likes to tell us who we are and what we're not, but the truth is we belong to nothing and we belong to everyone. We're existing in a time of heightened state violence. We are watching people be pushed out of their homes here in America, in Palestine, in Sudan, in Iran, everywhere, as if they don't belong to them, as if we don't belong to each other. Music is a vehicle for voices that are buried, that are searching, that are alien. Turnstile has always existed as an alien thing. Thank you to our family, our friends, our partners, our peers for continuing to shape us and give us a sense of belonging. Thank you to anyone who has ever come to a show and swung in the dark with us. Thank you to our team who fight for us to be in this room. Thank you to Baltimore for giving us a stage. Thank you to everyone who has allowed this band to be a mirror for this community. Thank you." So that's what they wrote on Instagram under the video of their acceptance speech. With the timing that you have for an award show, like I know, like it's really quick. Like you have to get your words out like so fast, and you have to kind of get in and out. I don't know if they prepared anything going in, or if they were just like, "Oh, we're probably not gonna win. Like we're kind of a long shot," all this kind of stuff. And when they got up there, they're just like, "Oh my God, like, you know, thank you. Like this is great," all this kind of stuff. And then when they had a minute to kind of think about it, then they said kind of what they wanted to say, maybe a bit more in their Instagram caption. Because, you know, when things happen in the moment, it can be hard to make sure you hit everything that you want to say or say whatever you want to say. As a punk band, I do think you are a punk artist or whatever. I think you do have a responsibility to say, like, to speak out about what's going on in the world and speak out about, you know, injustice and everything, because it's something that's so integral to your genre and something that's so integral to the music you make in a lot of cases, you know. And especially now with just so much going on globally and at home, at their home and everything too. I think definitely like Bad Bunny had one of the best speeches of the night. And I was kind of surprised that more people didn't bring stuff up in their speeches. But again, it's how many people prepared and how many people didn't, and what popped into people's heads first, and stuff. So yeah, that's my opinion. I think you should, excuse me, have something to say on the matter.
Did we lose John?
No, I was waiting for your response, Sam.
So I watched the Turnstile Awards being like, you know, in like online. Like I actually watched it not as a clip, right? Both of them.
Sure.
And this is not the first time that Turnstile has been into the Grammys. The Turnstile has actually been to the Grammys before, and they did not win. The other thing is, they did cycle their, you know, walking music twice for them to get to the podium, which tells me they were definitely sitting in the boondock somewhere or in a back room. So I personally don't think that they even thought that they were going to win. And I think they did probably have like a roadmap of, I guess this is what I'll say. But, you know, if you've ever seen Turnstile, Turnstile is not really the type of band that, like, when they're on stage, they talk a lot. So, and people could at me if I'm wrong. at least recently, they haven't really talked a lot. So I honestly think that they were more in shock that this is happening right now. And when they got to the podium, because it, like, if you watch them, all they wanted to do was like hug each other, you know, that they were so happy that they did something, and got something, you know, and it just seemed that way. I personally am going to say Spirit Box got robbed for best metal performance
Agreed.
because Turnstile isn't necessarily metal,
No, not at all.
which tells me the Grammys definitely has an issue with subgenres and putting them in correct places that needs to be there. So this tells me that the algorithm for the Grammys is weird, or their ears are weird. I don't know. Because I don't necessarily think that best metal performance is somewhere that Turnstile should be. But here we are, they won for Birds of All Songs. I definitely agree with the best rock album for Never Enough, because I love Never Enough, you guys. I love it so much. It was on my top 11 this year, but this last year, that is. But yeah, no, that was a little weird to me, metal. Like punk hardcore isn't necessarily metal, and metal isn't necessarily punk hardcore. So I think we need to, like, you know, redefine what metal is or what punk hardcore is to metal, because Turnstile's not the type of band, especially now, that sounds anything metal to me.
Oh,
Well, I agree.
100%. Yeah.
This might be too high of a standard, but I feel as though Turnstile should have said something. And if it were a pop band or even just a quote rock band, I wouldn't say so. But Turnstile is kind of one of these bands that they're punk and hardcore when it's useful to be. And when they're not, they're like, we don't belong to anything. We belong to everyone, which is kind of a dodge saying we don't want any responsibility, you know? And so that's they're kind of using punk and hardcore when they need cred. But when they don't need cred, then, oh, we're just a band, you know? Which is annoying to me. And I think maybe they should have stepped up to the plate and said something. And that's my point. Here's somebody that's been saying a lot of things. Kanye. We talked about him last week. We're just making it kind of official, and that, you know, Kanye said he was sorry for making anti-black and anti-Jewish statements. And it turns out he's got a new album coming out. Em and I actually talked about this a great deal last week. And so the question is, Sam, I'll let you weigh on this, is do you think Kanye's truly sorry? That did he have a bad time? Was he in a bad mental health space? Is he in recovery now, or is this strictly just a record sale move? And are you surprised that he's on the label of Larry Jackson, a relatively large label run by one of the guys that was responsible for Apple Music? I thought Kanye was castigated to the desert, you know, but now he's on a large independent label.
Yeah, so anything goes with Con Yee, right? Anything goes. 'Cause we really don't even know what his headspace is at any given moment.
Yeah.
We don't know if he's okay, if he's not okay, if he's pro-Trump, if he's, you know, like any of this stuff. So what him apologizing about his anti-Semitic and anti-black statements, I don't buy, because it's gonna happen. There's a history and a pattern of things happening with him, and then it just getting, you know, washed away. Mental health, mental health, mental health. So I really don't know if this is him actually being like apologetic to things he's said, or if this is just him saying it right now because 50 million people that invested in him is telling him you must say this. You know, I do find it funny that his new record is called Bully. Like, I'm like, Didn't you have, you just had like beef with everyone. You had beef with Taylor Swift. I'm like, okay, I'm starting to think, are you the bully or is everyone else the bully to you? I don't know. I guess we'll find out when this album drops on March 20th, right? Yeah, I don't know, like, you know, when you're someone like Kanye West with the name of Kanye West, he's kind of aligned to Trump in the ways that he still has a loyal following, even though he has said bad things in the past and has done odd things in the past. So I'm not shocked that he's still signed to a major label because, hey, money's money. Major labels are only looking for money, and if you're going to sell records, lots of them, then you know that's totally they'll pick you up regardless. This is not like, you know, some rinky-dink band in Philadelphia that only played three shows trying to get a record label, you know. That's really good, but you know they just don't have the following or the connections, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Kanye's on Kanye's planet, and Kanye will continue to do Kanye stuff. My only thing is, don't say stupid things and expect to be not held accountable for it.
But the, and that kind of goes back to the question. You know, I'm not always comfortable with that phrase, quote, accountability. I mean, I'm all for being responsible for your actions, but I in punk and what you know in whatever word, I don't like when that word accountability seems to be flexed in a certain direction. Is if Kanye has true mental health issues, and if he is working towards them, then does he get to come back? Does he get a redemption? I think that's the question.
Well, you know what? I think I would be the wrong person to ask because I don't care for Kanye West. like at all. So like and again, I said I don't really buy this apology whatsoever.
So you think it's for record sales?
Yes, I do think it's
Might
for
be.
I do think it's people with money telling him you need to say this.
I think I would disagree, except if it was just a statement, I would disagree. But because the record announcement came like one day after the apology, I agree with you 100%. Which even to me, even if it is just for record sales, it's terrible strategy. Wait 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was like, when it comes to, well, we don't know what happens, like, you know, in the back end of all of this. Kanye West has also been the type of person that will just leak things out that should have never been said yet, you know? Just because he's like, oh, he needs to talk about it or brag about it or whatever. So it's a very possible that, like, you know, yes, this record deal is coming out, but, you know, he wasn't supposed to say it yet.
But of course, also, you know, on the flip side of the things is Extension, who committed sexual, violent sexual abuse of women after he died. He had number one records after he died. So maybe people just don't care. Maybe people just don't care. So, which I don't know, it's kind of messed up. It's real messed up. Anyways, we'll see. Let's see here. Oh, speaking of kind of messed up, the new Codefenders have put out a new song. They got a new record coming out. And what do you think of the Codefenders?
I'm not a big Codefendants fan myself. What are your thoughts on the Codefendants?
Well, I'm at. Oh, go ahead, Sam.
Oh, were you asking about the track or just in
I mean,
general?
so why don't you like the Codefenders?
Just there's something about it that just doesn't. This is a little. It doesn't sit. It doesn't click with me, I think, is the way to put it. Like, I feel like some of like the guests they have, like the new song they have their Rivals with the DOC. I think his part is interesting and sounds really cool. But I think everything else just sounds a little disjointed and it doesn't flow necessarily. So that's just it. They just don't click for me.
Well, actually, sorry, Sam, for jumping in, but I actually agree with what Em says in that, like, to me, the whole thing feels disjointed, and I'm like, it's oh, like, I'm a white guy that's rapping, and every lyric is really impassioned, and when I rap, I'm at the bottom of my soul because I think I'm Tupac, but I'm a white guy, you know, and I got, you know, and then they've got like the other guy, like kind of doing, kind of folk and cowpunk and folk punk kind of stuff, and it's jang. It's like rap and folk punk together, and they'll put in some random 80 synths, and it none of it just seems to fit together. It all seems to be a put on to me, frankly. It all seems manipulative. I don't really buy any of it. To me, it all sounds like parts that don't fit together, and people trying to seem deep when they're not really being deep. That's my. I like the D. Well, actually, if the listeners might know, the DOC is actually a very seminal figure in hip hop. He had a big album called No One Can Do It Better. He was kind of part of the NWA clique. And he wrote most of the lyrics on Dr. Dre's The Chronic album and some on Snoop Dogg's record and a bunch of those early Death Row records. However, right around that time, he got in a bad car accident and his vocal cords got crushed. And that's why his voice actually used to be much more raspy. But that's why he's got that very raspy delivery. But it is kind of wild that the DOC is hanging out with, Fat Mike and those guys. I mean, like, you know, the music world's a pretty small world, so it's not that crazy. But to me, like, this none of this works together, and it all seems kind of cheesy and forced. And it seems to me to be rap music, pseudo rap music made for suburban kids. And it's not really rap, and it's not really dangerous, and it's not really deep, you know, they wouldn't even think it's deep. That's my take. But people do love this band. And I wonder, do people love this band or do they just love the band because they're told to love this band? I mean, I've seen them live and I've heard the records and I'm just not wowed by it at all. I feel it's weird and not in a good way weird, like cheesy. I don't know. Sam, what do you think?
I've seen the Codependence once and they're fine. I'm not like I would have to say out of all of the Fat Mike projects, this is definitely not anywhere near any top of my list. Not that, you know, I listen to a lot of that. Yeah, I do think it was very disjointed. It seems like everyone had their parts and like they just like crammed it together.
Right, right.
Like the music in the background, like, you know, Fat Mike doing his thing in the back, it like seems very Fat Mike like. Like that I kind of dig, but like I do like crossover music. Like I do like when genres cross over. And I do think if done well, it is extremely interesting and like really, really great. But I don't think this works for me. I do know that a lot of people go gaga over Codefendant Records, and I'm not sure if it's because they actually like the Codefendants or it's because it's a Fat Mike project and they must collect them all, you know, type of situation. So, like, I do know when I saw the Codefendants, there wasn't a ton of people that was like up there singing along to them, you know. But then again, I live in New York and we're all jaded here, so that's also plausibility.
Well, I think you're right, Sam, and I think people think they should like them just because it's Fat Mike used to be a member, but now he's not a member, but I guess he's still the producer or one of the producers.
Well, he was
But
in the video.
he's in the he, but he, technically he's not in the band anymore. Like
Yeah.
when they play shows and stuff, he's not there, you know. Even when they played his hometown, he wasn't in the band when I saw them. I think you're right in that people. I mean, it is different in that it's bad rap with bad folk punk, which I don't think has ever really been done before. So it's different in that respect. But I think people think they should like it because Fat Mike likes it, you know. And I think you hit the nail on the head. But the question is, and I think the answer is going to be yes, is can something catch on based off that, and then everyone just thinks they're supposed to like it? So everyone just says they do, and then somehow they do. And I think that might happen here. And I think, you know. Codefendants might actually become even bigger. They're already actually a pretty big band, and I mean, I don't know what their guarantee is, but I bet it's sizable. I know that they've got a pretty powerful management company behind them, and some pretty powerful PR people behind them. So it appears that there is interest on the backside of things with regard to this band. And will it catch on the front on the audience side? It might. I just don't. I feel this is the thing is where people are being told they should like it, so they do. You know.
Well, so I feel like the one thing that I like about Punk News and the three of us is we do a lot of research to find bands the three of us likes separately and collectively that isn't being pawned off by PR people.
True, but what band do the three of us like? I don't. Is there any
No,
band the three of us like?
well, I'm saying separately and together. I'm not,
Oh, I see.
I'm saying, yeah, in general, because like, that's the thing is like you had with the home front, like, the home front, there was only like, a couple of like, PR pushes for it, but I was like, pretty much all of my friends love that home front album. A lot of this is being pawned off to us by PR people, right? And kind of like, oh yeah, like, you guys should be covering this. And we do cover it because there is the entire Fat Mike thing, because we've historically covered f all of Fat Mike's projects in the past and conti will continue to do so, so it's kind of like, I think if you are a true punk, you will say what you want to say and not follow the pack. So if you don't like the Codefendants, it's okay to not like the Codefendants. If you like the Codefendants because everyone else says so, I think that's a problem.
I
Yeah.
well, I actually would accuse Turnstile of the same thing, and that I think people like Turnstile just because they're told to like Turnstile. Like, it sounds like Third Eye Blind to me. I am just, well, listen, I got into punk for danger, power, weirdness, and Turnstile, and even the Codefendants don't really. Anyways, enough
Well,
beating up on.
Turnstile doesn't do it for you, but it does it for me, and it does it for some other like staffers on Punk News that used to work here.
Sam, what is that you like about Turnstile? Like what are the things that you like about them?
Well, Sam is a very magical unicorn sometimes because I don't necessarily listen to just punk. I listen to pop, I listen to like, alternative music, I listen to all sorts of things. I listen to like, music that does that's punk but like isn't even of this language. I also do listen to metal. So like, when it comes to Turnstile, I wasn't necessarily I've seen them when they were a hardcore band. I wasn't really into that, but I did see why kids love them so much because they were fun. When it comes to the Turnstile now, what I like about it is it's just like it's to me it's just catchy. It's just catchy rock music. But then again, my husband plays in an alt 90s alt rock cover band, so of course I'm into this.
Well, there you go. Turnstile, catchy rock music. There you go. Let's cover one last story. Sam, I don't know if this is going to be a big deal for you or not. Adam Willard has left Alkaline Trio. He said, with everything going wrong in the world right now, this may seem insignificant, but it's not for me. I have parted ways with Alkaline Trio. Thanks everyone who made my time there so awesome. Very thankful to the experience. I am currently considering all studio collaboration and touring opportunities. So actually, I'm going to let Sam ruminate on this. I'm going to put this to M. M,
Okay.
was Adam
Yeah.
Willard fired? Do you care? And who will be the next drummer of Alkaline Trio?
I don't think Adam Willard was fired. I think there was a disagreement within the band and he decided to leave. I that's just baseless speculation. It's based on absolutely nothing. Just how the statement reads. Either that or maybe they are getting back with like one of their former drummers, or something. One thing that I thought was really funny was in the comments for this, someone had like petitioned for Mikey Erg to be the next drummer of Alkaline Trio. I thought that was pretty funny. I don't I will the band hasn't said anything yet. So I'm kind of wondering when they will or if they're going to. A drummer that I think would be kind of fun to have in would be oh, what's his name? Why am I blanking on this? He was fired from Foo Fighters and then he joined Nine Inch Nails for a little bit. Josh Freese. If Josh Freese became their drummer, that'd be perfect. I'd love it. But yeah, we'll have to kind of wait and see. I hope the band says something, but who knows? Sam, what do you think?
Oh, so I do love me some Alkaline Trio, but yes, this statement here does not read well at all for Alkaline Trio. I
No.
think Adam left on his own accord. If you read between the lines, it's not like he thanked Dan or Matt for his time there, because if I, you know, I think there was definitely a disagreement somewhere, because I don't think, like, why would he just leave the band, you know?
Yeah.
And then the fact that he then additionally said, I am currently considering all studio collaboration and touring opportunities. So it's not like he can't tour. It's not like he can't record in the studio. It's also plausible that there is a disagreement about the direction that they all want to take Alkaline Trio, because really, Alkaline Trio is Dan and Matt, right? Adam has only been there for like 3 years. So yeah, I think so. It's not like the statement doesn't go, hey, I'm taking time away from music. It's I'm taking time, I'm leaving Alkaline Trio. Adam's also been in like a million different great bands. like, you know, he's recorded with them. So, like, you know, with like Rock from the Crypt and like, you know, Angels and Airwaves and stuff like that, and Against Me. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, you know, he's just like not into what is happening there. Oh, he's also on Plausives? Yeah. Yeah, it sucks because I saw Adam with Alkaline Trio, I think, once, within the last 3 years, and they were really good with him. So I cannot even imagine who is left floating around, because the problem about being in a band is drummers don't come often. Once you find a good drummer, you keep them because they're just not too many available, especially when you're older, and able to drum in a certain way. Yeah, I do think that, like, you know, we definitely should hear from Alkaline Trio to figure out what the big picture is here. I don't know if Alkaline Trio is like like this is Adam's way of saying, peace, guys, I'm done. And he actually didn't speak with Alkaline Trio about it. Or Alkaline Trio is just like, let's find a new drummer so we could kind of like, you know, segue that in. Things like that. Who knows? I don't know. This is sad.
Yeah, I think it's probably a money thing. I'd be surprised if Adam Warren was like, I demand a pay raise, but I think they maybe had some sort of pay cut in mind because they're not playing a ton of shows, although there are shows on the books coming up this summer for Alkaline Trio. So I think it came to that. So we shall. But you know, Adam's been, I mean, he Adam Moore's been in Against Me, right, Sam? What else has he been in?
Yep. Well, he's pretty much like been he recorded with Rocket from the Crypt. He's recorded with Offspring, at least like one song for Offspring. Angel and Airwaves, which is one of the guys from Blink-182's like thing, right? Against Me, like the later end of Against Me, with Laura Jane Grace. Plausives, which is like amazing, with Warriors. Like, he's been around. Like, he's definitely like a drummer for hire. He's definitely a person that wants to make a living off of drumming, and which is totally valid because, again, like I said, there isn't too many drummers out there that is like super versatile in the punk world. So, hopefully someone snatches him up for a new project. But like a lot of the bands that he's currently with is like kind of like not that active.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's like looking for a bigger project, like, so someone that tours often. Who tours often? Like, doesn't Joan Jett like tour often?
Yes, and the
Like,
Melvins.
yeah,
The Melvins could have a third drum. The Melvins have two drummers right now. They could get a third. I'd bring in Adam Willard. So, well, so there you have it. But I'll tell you what, they don't need a drummer. Summer Soiree 9, August 1 in Philadelphia. Kepi Ghouli, plus R&J the Slackers, plus Vinny of Doom Stompers doing all Clash set. Danbury of Chumbawamba doing acoustic Clash and solo tracks. The Drugettes doing the hits of Clash 1, and of course the Draculas doing songs of hate and war and love. That's Summer Soiree 1, only $20. August 1 in Philly, it's gonna be a banger. So until then, M and Sam. When are we going to see the listeners? And by see, I mean, what will they hear us audibly?
Next week.